Welcome to the Persisters Can podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lubowitz. Today's certified persister is Tracy Sobers. Tracy was born in the UK before moving to St. John, New Brunswick as a child and Ottawa, Ontario as a teenager. She was raised in a family where politics was talked about around the dining table and everyone was expected to have an opinion. As she began her career in communications, she remained interested in the events of the day and became more involved in political action, including attending anti-apartheid marches. Tracy joined the office of Ontario Liberal leader Dalton McGuinty after his 1999 election loss and was by his side during all three of his election victories in 2003, 2007, and 2011. Tracy joins us today to talk about how she got involved in politics, what it takes to be an executive assistant to the premier, and how we can encourage more women to get involved in civic life. Welcome, Tracy.
Hi, Teresa. It's great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks so much for joining me. So I want to start with where you grew up. One of the things I like to talk about in politics is how not everyone who is in politics comes, you know, from downtown Toronto and has that kind of experience. Can you talk about, you know, where you come from?
Oh, well, it's a bit of a bumpy ride. It's not a simple answer, but I was born in the UK. And we moved to Canada when I was about 10. And first we lived in St. John, New Brunswick. And then I would say my formative years, as in high school and university, were in Ottawa. And when I finished university, that's when I moved to Toronto.
Awesome. That is quite the journey. You're actually our second technical East Coaster so far. So that's good. So you didn't start out your career in politics, though. Tell me about sort of your early career.
Right. My career has always been in communications. That was the craft that I was trained on. And the most significant beginnings for that was when I worked for several years for a medical regulator. And that's where I learned the craft of communication, starting out as the most junior communications person in the department. And it was a wonderful opportunity, actually, because we were the first communications department in that organization, which meant that I was there at a very exciting time when we were growing and learning. So everything we did was new, and it was new to the organization, and it was new to us. And we had a great time. We had some very large issues that we had to deal with at the time, because that was around the time that people became more interested in medical regulation. It was the physician regulator that I worked for. And I'd probably say at that time, most people didn't really have a clue what a medical regulator was. But I started when there was a concerted effort to publicize what the regulation of the profession was all about, and that you could contact the CPSO if you had a complaint about your physician, etc. There were a number of issues in the news that the college had never had to deal with before. So we were just flying by the seat of our pants and inventing things as we went along. And that's really where I started everything and began the progression into more senior responsibilities.
That sounds like excellent training for a life in politics.
Oh, it was. It was.
I'm wondering how you made that transition into political life.
Well, I would say the first thing I would say about that is I was raised in a family where politics was talked around the dining room table. We weren't actively involved in politics, but it was something that we cared about, and we recognized the importance of understanding issues and having an opinion. We were expected to have an opinion around the table. I often like to joke that there was no such thing as small talk around the table when my dad was there. We had to talk about serious issues, even though sometimes we didn't want to. but it did mean that we knew what was going on. Though I must say, since those years were in Ottawa, I certainly had more of an awareness of federal politics than I did provincial, and which I gather is quite a common thing, because clearly Ottawa being the seat of the federal government, that's the noise that you hear all the time. So as I was saying, that meant that as a person, I was always interested in the issues of the day and politics. And when I was at the College of Physicians and Surgeons, I was working with somebody who was actually a member of the Liberal Party. He was my director of communications. And so, of course, my upbringing was translated into how I interacted with people in all of my jobs. I always talked about what was going on with politics. At the time, apartheid was a huge thing, and used to talk proudly walking into the office about the march I went to the night before, even though there were some people who looked at me quite askance at the time. You know, you did what? Isn't the ANC a radical group? Those are the kinds of comments I used to get. But I wore my sympathies and my politics on my sleeve in those days, and everybody knew where I was. So lots of conversations. I became very good friends with my director of communications, and he was involved with the party. I left the college. That's when I went to the greeting card company. I went to Carlton Cards to manage their employee communications. And around that time, somewhere in there, I got a phone call from my friend that I worked with at the college, because he had actually decided to move on to working for the Liberals, and they were in need of new people. And even though I didn't have political experience, he knew I had communications experience, and he had confidence in what I was doing because I used to report to him. And they were in need of a press secretary. At the time, the Liberals were in opposition, and the leader of the opposition, then Dalton McGuinty, needed a press secretary. And I was asked to consider it. And the rest, as they say, is history. I took the job.
Yeah, so I want to talk a bit about that, because at this point it is, was it around 1999? Dalton McGuinty.
Yes, had already, it was 1999.
He had already lost one election as leader, which not everybody gets a second chance at that sort of thing. But this was also sort of a period of renewal in the party in general. It had been in power in the 80s for a little bit, but prior to that had not been in power for 40 years. So,
yes.
You know, I think when people think of the Dalton McGuinty years, they think of, you know, three back-to-back victories. But of course, there was first a loss, and then,
yes,
you know, the 4 years you were there prior to that victory in 2003, a ton of work
yes,
goes into an opposition campaign trying to be government. Can you talk about, you know, being press secretary during that time and what that sort of looked like over those 4 years, especially
right,
the election itself?
Yes. Well, I think I don't want to open that by not talking about what it was like to be press secretary of the time, but just what it was like to be a staffer at that time. And it was exciting, because there was a concerted effort in the leadership, you know, the senior people in the party and on the staff, to learn the lessons of 1999. Clearly, there was a recognition that we had some successes in terms of how we won the popular vote and had gained significantly more seats, toppling some long-term Tories, for example. So despite the loss, there was definitely a feeling of buoyancy. But at the same time, as I said, really a focus on learning the lessons and developing a real story about what the Ontario Liberals were about, and having the discipline to stick to that story. So as a novice in politics, I was completely fascinated by it all, because I got to watch these people with deep experience develop the narrative around Dalton McGuinty and what he stood for. I got to see the discipline with which they ensured that story bled through all the different issues that we were dealing with. I got to watch as they leaned into who Dalton was. They I remember there were a couple of times, for example, it was suggested that he take a particular stance on something. And, you know, if it wasn't in his heart, He was not at his best. So they learned to lean into and rely on who he was and who his character was, and not have him doing or saying anything that wasn't true to his character. So watching that was also exciting, sometimes the back and forth, but always coming back to what we were all about, what we stood for, and what we were trying to do for the for Ontarians. And of course, one of the other things that was funny to watch was how they developed this core group of MPPs who, for want of a better phrase, I know we often have used it in politics, the attack dogs. And whenever there was something that really had to be handled with a level of negativity, for example, certain MPPs were tasked with doing that, so that they could always keep Dalton as the premier in waiting. And
Right, yeah, it's extremely important.
watching it all unfold was a privilege.
I think there's, when you're speaking about the authenticity of Dalton McGuinty and his team and understanding that that was his greatest
Yes.
strength, I think there's an important lesson for that in anybody who gets into politics, because to
Yes.
me, I think of people like Jean Chrétien or even Pierre Trudeau, and I think on when the CBC did a movie on Pierre Trudeau, they had this line where people are like, "Well, they hate you, but they're going to re-elect you," about Pierre Trudeau, and it was because people knew who he was, regardless of whether they
Yes.
agreed with him or not.
Yes.
That authenticity came through, and they're like, "Well, I know what I'm getting with him, and you know what? That makes me
Yes.
feel comfortable." So
Yes.
I think that authenticity piece is really, really important, and I think that's a big part of why, Dalton was so successful, winning three campaigns. So the first election victory came in 2003. That was a majority victory. It was a big change because there had been 8 years of the Mike Harris and Ernie
Yes.
Eves Tories. It was the first time in Ontario history a party had gotten 2 million votes. It's only happened twice in our history. And so your boss suddenly was the new premier and was forming a new government. And so you had, a new job to take on. Can you talk about what that was?
Yes. So once we won government, I remained on as press secretary for a few months. But I will tell you quite honestly, I always knew that I actually didn't want to be a press secretary in government. I had conscientiously cultivated a reputation for myself with the press gallery as somebody who was a straight shooter, who just gave them the facts. And I never, to this day, do not think of myself as a spin doctor. That is not my talent. And but I also recognize, much as I'm not often fond of that phrase, spin doctor, there is a talent that comes with picking apart the nuance of an issue and helping the media and others understand it from your point of view. And as I said, I deliberately cultivated a relationship where they knew that what they got from me was the facts, and that I was there to help them get the right story. But I also, so I knew that once we won government, that it would become a little bit more complicated, and that a press secretary had to be the one who could showcase the nuance. And show more about what was behind decisions that we were making. And I wasn't awfully comfortable with that. But so I ended up being offered a position with Dalton when his director and executive assistant went on maternity leave and also moved on to some other things. And they asked me to take on that role, which turned out to be a role I was ideally suited for, and was the role I maintained through the next two elections until the time that Dalton stepped down.
Right. So that was a period of 9 years, which is a long time in politics.
Yes.
It's really funny. When I first got involved in politics, there was people like yourself and others, because there's transition periods in government where people sort of move on after a while. Sometimes it's one mandate, sometimes it's two. It does. I always say politics is, like three times the amount of time of everything else you do in life. It takes that kind of toll on you. So
Yes.
what kind of stuff did you do over that period of time, and did your role change at all over those 9 years?
Yes. And I think the role changed because I got more and more comfortable in the role,
For sure, for sure.
and became more aware of what I could delegate and what I needed to take
Right.
on. And once I started to delegate, I was able to take on even more responsibilities because I had more time. But overall, the role, it's just every day was different. The role as director and executive assistant is kind of a senior advisor role, with the role being to ensure that the premier has everything he needs to face the day, and everything he needs to be ready for the next day, and everything that needed to be executed as a result of the day before was being executed by the right people. As you can imagine, I mean, one day you're in the office and it's a series of meetings, and then following out of that meeting, you're or before the meeting, you're making sure that the right briefing notes have been prepared and that speeches have been prepared that speak to what he that match his authenticity, as you were saying, and of course included the facts of what the announcement was. So there's always a lot of back and forth there. Or you could be on what we used to call a tour day, when we're out in somewhere in the province where you're more or less an office on the road. So in addition, you're also making sure that he has everything he needs and is well prepared and well briefed for the three, four, five events that you're doing that day. And the tour days were usually the most intense because they would start with us leaving the office at around 7:30, for example, to drive somewhere. And let's say if you were going to a community like Stratford, you might have some stakeholder meetings. Follow a stakeholder meeting. You may have meetings with some representatives of a particular issue. And usually the day would end with some sort of a fundraiser or other evening event, which meant you probably didn't end up getting home until about 10 o'clock. And then you had to do it all over again the next day at 7 o'clock.
I was an executive assistant to a politician in a much like lower scale than you had done, and I always think of it as tasks as assigned type role, and definitely one
Absolutely.
where you are working first thing to last thing in
Yes.
the day. Especially, I
Yes.
imagine for someone like Dalton McGuinty, who has always struck me as a very prepared person. And
Absolutely.
somebody who really probably likes to dive into the issues and really get their head around it, so they, feel like they are the authority in the room when they're talking about those things.
You're absolutely right. And as the last person to see materials before they went to him, a large part of my role was to make sure that those materials actually had what he needed. And over the years, of course, I came to understand what he needed,
Right.
so that I could see something and say, okay, this is the issue. I know he's going to be asking these questions, or this or that particular speech. This doesn't sound like him, or it's not hitting the right tone. The speeches in particular, I had so much fun with. Partly because one of the things that brought Dalton and I together, or why we worked, is we both have a big love for the English language. And of course, my background being communications, I had more of an affinity to giving my opinion on the communications materials versus the policy materials. So, as I'm
For
sure
sure.
you know, Teresa, people who come to this role of an executive assistant to a premier or a minister, they have all kinds of backgrounds. Like the two people who did it before me were both lawyers, for example.
Right.
So that kind of meant that they had the greatest interest in all the policy. and were in a position to give excellent feedback and insights into policy documents were coming, which was not really my forte, other than to be able to. But having said that, I also think what a good thing that I was able to bring to it was the ordinariness in terms of, I don't understand this, therefore somebody else isn't going to understand it. And I also learned to lean into that instinct. If I held back and didn't question something, Dalton usually asks me the question, and I'd be like, oh, that's what I thought, but I just figured he knew. But he wasn't often thinking about, yeah. And he wasn't always just thinking about whether or not he knew, but he wanted to be able to explain things to people, and he wanted to anticipate what other people might be questioning. So I learned to lean into that. But with the communications material, where I obviously felt more comfort giving my feedback and input, I used to love getting the speeches and giving my thoughts into his delivery, and knowing what he would want to say, what jokes he'd like to say, where there'd be an opportunity for a great pithy quote. So I really enjoyed that part of the job.
I imagine you came to know his stories very, very well. I've from, you know, watching him from a bit further afield, I have come to understand that Dalton McGuinty is very much a man of anecdotes.
Yes.
And he loves to share stories. My favorite one is the one he tells about camping with his sons. I think it was in Algonquin
yes.
Park. And
yes.
The park ranger comes up, shines a flashlight in his face, and is like, you look like that guy, Dalton McGuinty. And he's like, you don't say. And he's like, good thing you're not, or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I could tell that story verbatim.
So it sounds like you guys had a really good rapport, which I think is like the number one thing when it comes to being an EA for a politician. The other thing is being, you know, the person who really makes sure, as you were saying, that they have everything they need. So can you talk a little bit about that process? Because, you know, I have been a speechwriter, I have been other roles, and I know sometimes other folks who need to feed into the binder or whatever way you're sending home materials don't always understand deadlines, don't always understand, you know, everything that goes into curating that daily package that goes home with a member. Can you talk about, you know, air traffic controlling that?
Yeah, that was often a challenge. We had a fairly good system. I mean, we knew we had a standard for what was to be prepared for each type of event. If it was, now I have to reach back into my memory and try and remember what all those things are. So I'm sure I'm going to miss things. But for example, if it were a meeting, you know, clearly there was a briefing note, and sometimes there might be supportive documents behind that. If it was an event, we would have what we call an event note. I actually remember the things for events more than I do for meetings, because generally for a meeting, it's a briefing note and maybe some bios on the attendees or so on.
Right, yeah.
But for an event, there's an event note that really told you that this is where you're going, this is who you're going to meet with, this is why you're meeting with them, and here are your movements. And then behind, I used to say it was like a book. You know, the event note was the title page and the index. And then you go deeper down and there's the briefing note that tells you why you're meeting with these people going to the event. And then below that might be a backgrounder. And below that will be the news release that's going to come out after that time. And then the last thing will be the speech that he's giving, for example. So we had a standard format of things, and my sister and I knew what was expected. And the policy people and the communications people, I was at the front, as you said, but there was a whole team of people at the back who were generating all of this information. And there were weekly meetings. I can't even recall what the name of those meetings were, but there'd be meetings when the policy people and the communications people, they would get together and look at the calendar and determine what the documents were going to be needed to support the premier for that. So they knew what they were doing. And then my assistant was actually putting the package together, because she knew what I needed and she knew what they were providing. And it was just continually rolling. It really was. And anytime somebody ever asked me what was needed, it was really, as I said, think about it as a book. and you get deeper and deeper and deeper and think about what you would want to know if you were going into that meeting or if you were about to give that speech. Because as you said, Dalton McGuinty wasn't a fellow who just took the materials and bleated it out word for word. He was thoughtful. He reviewed the materials. He had questions. And he would change things and update materials to reflect his own thinking. So as a team, all of us had to be very prepared to know that he would be calling to ask more questions, for example. So when we'd be on the road, the policy people would all, if we were making an announcement to do with a particular policy area, let's say the environment, the fellow who was responsible for the environmental file in the Premier's office always knew needed to make sure he had his phone around when we were on our way to the event, because they were going to get a phone call, call about clarification, a phone call for additional information. As you said, this fellow never went into a meeting cold. He was well prepared. And it was my job, as you said, to make sure that I understood what he was going to need and that I could look at the materials and make sure that it was all there and that it reflected his needs. But it's important to recognize, as I said, I was just at the front. Right. There was a whole bunch of people at the back making this whole wheel turn.
It is quite the machine. I think people think of, shows like Veep, where Gary's whispering into the vice president's ear saying, this is so-and-so, this is whatever. But in real life, politicians are generally pretty thoughtful and will spend that time working through those materials. There's a whole shop of people preparing them. And then, the dreaded question and making sure you actually know the materials you put into that binder.
Yes.
Because you will get a call.
Mm-hmm.
I've never served a politician who, you gave the materials to them and they didn't have follow-ups.
And you understand why.
Exactly.
If you put yourself in their shoes, and as I said to you before, the lesson I learned was if I had a question, somebody else had the same question.
Exactly.
So why not get ahead of it?
So I'm wondering if you can sort of speak to the primary skills someone in that type of role needs to be successful, as you obviously were because you were in it for so long.
It's a multitude of things. As I said to you before, people come to the role with a particular specialty, with my specialty being communication. So in that role, clearly, I brought those talents to the role. The other talents, I think, you have to have good project management skills because there are so many balls in the air.
And
you have to be able to make sure so many trains are running on time and where each of the cars are along the track. So I was constantly on a mission to have the best system. So every few months, I think I tried another system to make sure I was on track of things. But you need to be well organized and you need to have good project management skills. And you also need to have good relationship skills, because the role was also about ensuring that the right people felt that they had access to the Premier, that he wasn't considered to be an aloof individual, that people were heard. But as that first person before they would get to the Premier, I needed to make sure that I could build solid relationships with so many people to ensure that they trusted me and trusted my word, and that they would know that if they weren't able to speak to the Premier, but if they spoke to me, that they knew it would get to the Premier or that it would be dealt with. So I took great pride in ensuring I built honest and solid relationship with stakeholders, with my fellow staff members, and with MPPs and cabinet ministers. I felt very strongly, more than any other skill, that the ability to build honest and solid relationships was very important, so that people had trust in the office and trust in me. And outside of those people I just mentioned, there's also the party membership, that you're party executive and the president. And so again, making sure that they felt that talking to me was getting them closer to the premier and that I wasn't a barrier. And getting to know the premier and understanding his needs was important. In some respects, I heard a great quote when I was watching. Do you recall the movie? I don't remember it, but it was written by the same fellow who wrote Downton Abbey by Julian Fellowes. And there's a scene in that movie where the housekeeper of the grand house says to a younger servant, "Do you know what makes a good servant? It's the art of anticipation."
Yep.
She says, "I know what they're going to need before they know it themselves."
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is true for political staffers as well, and certainly for a political staffer in my position. The premier, a senior politician, does not have time to think about the ordinary things. So part of my job was understanding the art of anticipation so I could make sure that what was needed was there before he even asked it. So you need to understand nuance. You need to read signs and know when somebody's hungry, tired, worried, puzzled. Your job is to be a right arm and
yes.
to just know.
I think it's one of those things like I have worked for two different politicians who forgot how to press elevator buttons eventually. And the reason was not because they were like, oh, staff is here, they should press it. It was because they were so up in their heads about everything that they were tasked with in their ministerial file. And I think about, you know, when I worked at the Ministry of Housing, that minister had to think about, you know, the homelessness challenge and like literally people dying in the street, and you'd get these updates. And so when you think about the things that are occupying their minds, you need people like you who are taking care of all the small little things. Like if you think about your own personal life, all the small little annoying chores you have to do just take up so much mental space and mental load. So, you know, when you're a politician, like people like you are crucial for making sure everything is just going as it should so they can focus on the big picture stuff.
Absolutely. And I think there's one other thing that I didn't mention that is also important, and it's a certain amount of emotional intelligence.
Yes.
He needs to call that person whose mother passed away. Again, that comes to the whole barrier, not being a barrier thing. You need to understand that in order for people to have faith in the premier, they also need to see him or her as a human being. At least that's my philosophy. So being able to read people and their needs, I think is key.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's just a good skill set to have in life in general, to make it way through your life. But especially something like politics, which is so people driven, right?
It is. It is. I think sometimes people can be so impressed by the loftiness of the roles, or even our own roles, right, that we forget A, it ends, and B, that it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, we are all the same. So we need to treat each other with respect and kindness, no matter what. So I felt those things quite passionately, and I believe the former premier felt that as well. An emotional intelligence is about realizing that we are just real people at the end of the day. And sometimes it's good to just have a joke. Sometimes it's good to tell them about the crap that's in the newspaper versus the big story, political story of the day. You know, I mean, you're still going to have a conversation with a normal person.
Well, and especially when, you know, he first became premier, like I remember, I have a distinct memory of the 2011 campaign being the first time social media was really present in Ontario politics. So we think about where we get our news from today, like all the stuff coming at us, and that didn't exist back then. So, you know, having somebody experiencing life outside the premier's office is kind of helpful to keep you grounded. So during this period, there was two more elections, so 2007 and 2011. I don't think I've ever asked you what your role was during those campaigns or what you were working on in your volunteer capacity.
All right. So in Well, going back to my first election in 2003, that's when I was the press secretary. So I was on the bus. I was on the bus for all the elections.
Yes, yes, okay.
In 2003, I was on the bus as the press secretary. So I was on the media bus.
Right.
And
so just so people know, the media bus is separate from where the leaders' buses. Absolutely. They go together, but they're
they go together,
buses.
But they're two separate buses. And on our bus, and again, new enough to politics, I thought all of this was so cool, you know, because on the media bus, you know, they've taken out seats and made desks for everybody, and it's all wired, and but it's still row up. I'm going to guess maybe there were 20 media on the bus. Yeah. And three staff.
Because each outlet would pick a journalist to go with each leader.
That's
generally
right.
Speaking.
That's right. So our job, there are three staff on the bus with me serving as press secretary. And it's kind of doing the same job that you were doing at Queen's Park, just on a bus. But it was a lot more regimented, right? It was like every day, this is what we're doing tomorrow, people. Here's what's going to happen. There was a lot more, all the feeding and caring I was telling you that you have to do for the premier. You sort of have to do
right.
it for the media on the bus
right.
because they themselves are just on the go, running, running, running. And they're so focused on the deadline and the story of the day that it's easy for them to, you know, the amount of time somebody said, where are we going? And then, of course, answering their questions and so on.
I was going to say your only facts with the media approach makes sense when you think about your first huge experience with them was trapped on a bus with them. There's nowhere to run.
It's a surreal existence, and 30 days with 20 people with their ups and downs and personalities, all of us, staff included. I mean,
for sure,
not every day was pretty. But the great joy of politics is that, because at the end of the day, you've had some laughs, you've had some fights, but and you've had a lot of intensity, and when it ends, it's joyous. I mean, I remember when we won in 2003, the first person to hug me was a reporter. And
it's a bit of trauma bonding, right? Like
you're stuck in this place together. It's trauma bonding that it was. And I remember that hug to this day, because I mean, trust me, that reporter had, as they all do, they maintained their integrity. They,
exactly,
you know, I wasn't learning who was a Liberal supporter or a Conservative Party supporter.
Well,
that
and
what
some,
it was about.
Some in the Queen's Park Gallery have, you know, stated many times that they don't vote.
Well, exactly. But that hug, the reporter, I know he turned to me and he said, "Trace, you've won." And I was like, "Really? You're sure I can be happy?" He said, "Yes, you won." And he gave me a big hug. And again, as you said, it's the trauma bonding.
It is.
And I remember that hug to this day because it was genuine.
Yes. So that was 2003. And in
yes.
2007 and 11, you were on the bus again. But was it still the media bus or a separate one?
It was no, I was on the leader's bus in those elections because then I was performing my duties as executive assistant, but on the bus.
Right.
So that was weird.
But
again,
instead of government materials, it was now campaign materials.
Now it was all campaign materials. Exactly. And of course, one of the fascinating things for your listeners, I remember the OPP asking me this because they were puzzled because they noticed that at one point, the day before the writ was dropped, everybody was saying the premier this, the premier this, the premier that. And then the writ drops, and suddenly it was
leader.
The leader this, the leader this.
Yeah.
And they said,
yeah.
Why is everybody calling him or her the leader? So that's a bit of a change, right? But
yes.
But again, stuff happens in government, and suddenly he's the premier because something happened in Ontario that he needs to address, not as the leader, but as the sitting premier of the day. But yeah, so everything becomes quite partisan, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, you know, responding to each other's messages of the day. But the process of what we are providing to the premier is the same, just faster and a heck of a lot more and every single day. So it's the normal work with more intensity.
Yes. I've been a speechwriter in government and a speechwriter for Kathleen Wynne during the 2018 campaign. It's a very different pace. It's fast in all of it, but it's lightning fast during a
It's
campaign.
lightning fast. And it's also a bit weird because my colleagues shrink in terms of the colleagues I have immediate access to, because it's just who's on the bus, right? And but everybody else is back somewhere in the campaign office having their own experiences, which are equally dramatic and intense. But it's not like I can walk down the hallway and ask for clarification on something. It's there's a little bit more distance, but because of what we're doing and how important it is and how quickly everything needs to turn around, it's kind of like you have a red phone. If the premier needs an answer to something, you pick up the red
Pick up the
phone
red
and
phone.
somebody's there. I mean, it's a figurative red phone, but you could imagine because it's the time has shrunk in terms of when you need to get an answer, when you need to be ready. It's 3 times a day. It's a lot.
Was it a lot different in 2007? Now I'm just getting technical. Was it a lot different in 2007 versus 11, just from a tech perspective? I'm thinking back to the BlackBerries that, BlackBerries
Oh
were the main thing
gosh.
in politics for the longest time. We didn't really have smartphones that were just like screen keyboards, till later campaigns.
They weren't the kinds of smartphones that we have now with the clarity of the screens and so on. But and
For
oh yeah,
sure. And
I think I had an
did
iPad
you have to have
by
a, I assume you had like a printer on the bus and you were just like
Oh
firing
gosh,
out stuff.
that's an excellent question. The bus was an office all of its own.
Mobile office, yeah.
We had a printer, we had computers, there was internet access. Obviously, there's a bathroom, there's a mini kitchen, because it is your home away from home, horrible as it was and cramped as it was. You needed to make sure you could have well, for me, a cup of tea.
That is
And that
crucial.
you, yeah, it's crucial, or that you can grab a healthy snack. So it's again another one of those things in politics that if you're not in it, it's pretty cool to see a bus fitted out for a campaign. You see it one day, it's a normal gray coach type bus. You go the next day, most of the seats are out. There's desks at the back. There's a space for the leader, because he has to be able to change there as well. So
Doing all those announcements today, yeah.
exactly. So there's a door there. So I guess a quarter or a third of the bus is there's a door, so which is his private space, and where his family might join him from time to time. But yeah, it's a mobile home, and
Was it
it's
strange?
funny how comfortable it becomes. I mean, it's horrible and comfortable at the same time because it's the most consistent thing you have.
Exactly. I know during, the various campaigns I've been on, the office and all my time in politics, really, the office was more familiar to me than my home. That's the life in politics. Well, speaking of being comfortable on the bus, was it very strange doing all the work you normally do with the premier basically right behind you?
No, it wasn't. And I think that speaks to two things. One is our relationship, which is one built on trust and good humor. So having him right behind me wasn't something that intimidated me. And the second reason is just because we had a job to do. The focus is on the job, and a campaign is extremely disciplined and focused. We know why we're there. So it doesn't matter if I'm uncomfortable or embarrassed or any number of emotions that may come into play. What's important is the job that you have to do and getting it done. And as I said before, I had one job, making sure he was prepared,
And
whatever that meant.
The best news of a campaign, too, is, you know, if you are embarrassed or upset or whatever, there's something happening right around the corner 5 minutes later. So you just move on. It's like the weather. It changes.
It's true. And you would know, Teresa, I mean, the number of times you might apologize to a colleague, it's, you know, I don't know who that person who was talking to you a little while ago who turned hysterical, but she's gone and I'm sorry. Would you like a cup of tea? Like you have to let those things roll off.
Exactly.
Because it's not the point. It is not the time for fragile egos.
No, and I think that is probably a very good piece of advice for politics in general, is that, and it goes back to your point earlier about it's not the person that matters, it's the role. Yes. I've always said this to people in politics, like, that person is important right now because of the premier, but at the end of the day, it's the office of the premier that is important. There's a great West Wing episode about that where Debbie Fitterer she ends up going to be the EA for the president.
Yes.
And at some point they're looking in her file and she had written some kind of message to the president's office years before, which seemed a bit like a terrorist message. but she called him Mr. President. She's like, well, I still respected the office, even if I didn't respect the person in it.
but you're absolutely right. I think it was a very important for all of us to never lose sight of the office versus the man or the person who's in that office, that person respected, was represented Ontario.
And I know Premier McGuinty had that viewpoint himself. Like, I know a colleague had told me a story about something that wasn't going right during a caucus meeting, and he had made the comment of, if we don't get the little things right, how do people trust us to get the big things right? And I think he probably felt that pretty deeply, and that seemed to guide, you know, everything he did in office, but also, you know, flood down to all the staff as well. You had the same sort of idea about things. So we have the 2011 election. It's the first minority for the McGuinty Liberals. And within a year, there's a couple by-elections the following summer. Within a year, we had an AGM in Ottawa. And then shortly after, Premier McGuinty told the world he would be stepping down. So at this point, your job, what did that kind of look like? Because we had a 3-month leadership process. There was about a 2-week transition of power between the two premiers in between. But, you know, the legislature was prorogued. There wasn't much going on because it was sort of caretaker mode. What did those last few months look like?
They were fairly quiet.
Yeah.
And a little surreal.
The opposite of mine during that time.
Yes. There was very much a feeling of temporariness and that you were doing things to make it easier for the next people, which was very important, of course. But yeah, it was a lot quieter is my memory of it. And making sure that the right things are in place as the Wynne government came into force.
And I think people don't necessarily realize that, yes, it's the same party, but one, a lot of the folks who were there with Dalton had been there with him for a very long time and came into politics because of him.
Yes.
A lot of the folks who got involved in Kathleen Wynne's campaign came in because of her. So there wasn't, you know, an extreme amount of overlap in the teams. Like, there were some people who were involved in both, but it was a huge change.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know we very much felt the responsibility of making way and making their path as easy as possible and sharing the benefit of what we'd learned over those years.
Which is always very important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sort of when you were in that period, I assume you got a bit reflective. I'm wondering if you can talk about what you were most proud about during the time that you worked for Premier McGuinty and part of those three sets of governments.
I think I felt a deep sense of privilege of having watched some up close, some really good things happen for the province. Good things that spoke to my own values, the privilege of seeing how it all works, how things come from an idea, to a piece of legislation that really matters to individuals. So that's probably what I'm most proud of, that I was able to watch it all and to be a small part of helping good people do good things. When I think about, full day kindergarten or the
Huge.
green belt, for example, they're lasting things that matter. More nurses. The thing about provincial politics is I don't know, there's no other level of government that t touches our lives so intimately than at the provincial level. So the things we were doing really mattered for people's well-being. And I am completely blown away sometimes to think that I got to watch it all.
It's amazing, right? Like I remember walking the halls of the legislature near the end of the Wynne mandate, and I had a pretty good sense we were not coming back. And I remember walking the halls and just like soaking it in, because
Yes.
when you're running around, like literally physically running all day long
Yeah.
between various buildings and doing various things, you sometimes forget. I tried to always keep it front and center who we were there for and what we were trying
Yes.
to achieve, and the privilege, the extreme privilege of getting to do these jobs. I think sometimes
Yes.
people forget it is a privilege.
Yes.
But you think of the millions of Ontarians that exist, and that you were, the 400 or so political
Yes.
staff in government who get to be a part of this. And I remember walking around and trying to drink in all the meaning.
Yes.
I remember bringing my grandmother and her partner there once, and just the wonder people have in their eyes
Yeah.
when they walk into the chamber and
Yes.
think about the
Yeah.
decisions that are being made. And but I think the provincial level is the well-being level,
Yes.
healthcare, education, all the things that make the world around you better all come from that provincial side. So
Yes.
it's a real privilege to get to do that work. And I'm hoping, as we have these conversations on this podcast, we inspire a few more people
I
to get
hope so
involved.
too.
Despite all our conversation about trauma bonding and all those things, it is a really great, rewarding experience. And I like to say, for me, I'm sometimes very pessimistic about politics, the experience of it, but I'm always hopeful about the possibility of it. And I think, after all my time in politics, that's something that has never been beaten out of me. Like, there's always an opportunity to do better again. And
Absolutely.
That's just the important thing to keep in mind. And there's so many
Yes.
people doing really good, honest work trying to make their
Yes.
province better, and it's just extremely important. So on that note, I have one more question, which is about being a woman in politics and what advice you can offer to whether they're younger or not, but people who just got involved in the political process in the last one or two election cycles, advice to them about how to get involved, what it's like to volunteer and work in politics, and just any, finishing wisdom you can impart on them.
I think my wisdom, for what it's worth, for young women in politics, I would say,
Yeah.
speak up.
100%.
The boys can be loud,
Yes.
and that's just sometimes by nature. But I think it's every voice has value, and every voice makes the whole better. And we all know that, theoretically, and we all believe that. But I think it's very important for a young woman joining politics to understand that there is a place for her there. It is welcoming, but speak up, speak up, speak loudly, lean in, as they say, and make your voice heard, because it will be a point of view that is new, that is different, and is important, and it needs to be heard.
The nice thing about individuals is that we all have a unique perspective. And if you're not
Yes.
speaking up, that perspective is lost. So I think all the
Yes.
advice you've just given is great, and a great way to approach politics if you're just getting involved.
Yes.
Thank you, Tracy, for joining me today. This was awesome.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for asking me to come.
The Persisters Can podcast is hosted and produced by Teresa Lubowitz. our theme song, Trailblazer, was created by four-time Emmy-nominated composer Guillaume. And our logo was created by Canadian graphic designer Andrea Ledwell. Thanks for tuning in.